are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I don't think I've heard anybody say splendid in quite so depressed a way as Chuck then, so that was a fun intro to the podcast.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I need to stop the podcast real quick just to announce the fact that Bradley Zimmer has hit his first Major League home run, and everybody should bow down to my knowledge about fantasy baseball.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Things like that. Aaron Sanchez looks a little better. I don't like to hear about him bleeding on the mound, which I think is a bad thing.
Yeah, things we don't want to see from pitchers, bleeding on the mound.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is our usual crew of Darius and Chuck. Chuck, how you doing?
I am just splendid. Just loving life. Hi, I'm a little excited today, though, because a guy we've been covering on our Fringe podcast, Tim Beckham, has three hits again today. And it's fun to talk to you Giants fans this year because, like, even your former players are getting Wally pipped when they're out of the lineup, etc. So I don't think your former third baseman slash shortstop is getting his job back in down in Tampa. So that's fun.
Well, I think he's getting his job back. It's going to be a little while, especially because he's experienced some renewed soreness in his surgically repaired heel. So I think he's going to be back a lot later than I think we had expected. But Darius is with us as well. Darius, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I don't think I've heard anybody say splendid in quite so depressed a way as Chuck then. So that was a fun intro to the podcast.
Well, that's Chuck for you, just, you know. Even when he's doing well, it sounds a little bit negative. Joining us today is a special guest, and that is Andrea Lamont, who is my drafting buddy at Tout Wars. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. That was a fun time we had.
Yes, you shared gummy worms with me. We made fun of the competition as we dominated that Tout Wars auction.
I'm winning. You know, I'm in first place in that.
You are?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, you did a great job, and it was a blast getting to actually, you know, sit down and talk with you and meet you at Tout Wars. But let people know kind of who you are within the industry, what you do, and where you can be reached on social media.
You can find me at Twitter, at RotoLady. I'm not a huge social media person, but I do check in on Twitter, and of course, I love getting tweets. It's kind of like getting a present in the mail, you know, as long as it's not a bill. But I write over at Lenny Melnick FantasySports.com. We do podcasts over there 5 days a week. I'm really the brains behind the website, so kind of just make sure everything runs smoothly. But every day I do an article called Baseball Chatter, and we just talk about basically Lenny gets up at 4 in the morning. He puts together his podcast for the day. He grabs like tidbits because he reads all of the out-of-town newspapers, and he puts the tidbits together, and then I clean them all up and like actually put in like some media and some different things. So it's good. It's a great read if you're interested in daily roto write-ups. I know you do one too, so I won't try to like compete with you. You do a really good job on your roto write-ups, but it's similar to that.
Oh, I appreciate that. And we love you guys over at Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports. Felt Lenny on the program. Had you on the program. You were one of our first ever guests, so it's good to have you back.
I really was. I had a fun time.
Yeah, no, it was. We were in just in our infancy stages when you came on, so it's good to have you back on and to talk with you again. And so let's jump in and talk some fantasy baseball. We're gonna start with Kevin Pillar, who is having a pretty decent season, and I think it's kind of under the radar right now. 6 stolen bases, 6 home runs, slashing .313, .365, .509. Andrea, what are your thoughts on Kevin Pillar so far?
Well, I love it. How can you not love it? I really think that he's, I mean, he was really great in the minors. When he came up to the majors, he didn't really do the same that he did in the minor leagues, but it's taken him a couple years. He's had two full seasons now of plate appearances. He's already got 174 plate appearances. That's because he bats leadoff. So I really love, I mean, I love the fact that his contact rate is up, his strikeouts are down, his walk rate is up, and he's really, I mean, he's in the top 10 in a lot of different categories in baseball. So yeah, he's probably under the radar, but if you drafted him for stolen bases, you're getting a little power too this season. So it's nice.
Chuck, you were really interested in talking about Kevin Pillar. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, I think in this wasteland of getting a lot of return on investment for players this year, it's been hard to do. Pillar has been one of those guys that's sort of been shining. You know, 2 years ago, his age 26 season, everyone was pretty excited that, you know, he got his OPS up to 713. He was trending the right way. Then last year, it dipped down to 679. Well, this year, it's at 874, which I don't really think it's going to stay at. But it's nice to see an uptick and to realize that everyone who thought those good things about him going into 2016, which included me, that they weren't incorrect. I mean, he looks like he's a pretty good player, and obviously him and Kiermaier are the two people that get grouped together as the people that are always going to be out in the field because they're so good. But, you know, there's no format where this kind of stat line that he's putting out this year isn't really, really helpful. So he's a guy that can really be helping teams that are going through guys that are hurt, etc. So I'm excited about Kevin Pillar. I'm excited about the Blue Jays in general. I think they're going to sneak their way back into things before it's all said and done. If they get Hap back healthy, etc. Estrada's been pretty good for the most part, not his last start. But things like that. Aaron Sanchez looks a little better. I don't like to hear about him bleeding on the mound, which I think is a bad thing. But, you know, hopefully Ozuna looks better. I mean, I just think things look a little brighter in Toronto than they did a couple weeks ago.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Kevin Pillar?
Yeah, things we don't want to see from pitchers bleeding on the mound. yeah, I mean, I'd echo what the guy said, really. You've got to love that he's sitting at the top of that lineup. Josh Donaldson's going to be back soon, which is going to help him get driven in even more, I think. And he looks like the kind of guy who could go 20-20 right now. So I think all the changes he made are great. It looks like he's being a lot more selective, not chasing anywhere near as much as he used to. And the one thing I really didn't used to like about him was that he never took a walk, and he's even doing that a little bit more this year with that new selectivity. So, yeah, all looks great to me. I think he's in a great spot. And as Chuck said, I think the Blue Jays have really turned it around after a terrible start. So I think they're looking like a much more dangerous offense than they did.
Yeah, and they're about to get healthier. Like you guys mentioned, Josh Donaldson is supposed to be back. Looks like Tulowitzki could be back pretty soon, which only bodes better things for Pillar, considering he has been leading off a lot of the season. The power is obviously not going to sustain itself at this rate. I don't think he is a, you know, 20-25 home run kind of bat, but I think he could easily go like 15-20, 15-25, and score a ton of runs at the top of that lineup and do it with a very good average. And I think it's super encouraging, like you mentioned, Darius, that he is walking a little bit more. So I think a lot of people were super hyped on him last year coming into the season, and I think that people kind of overrated him a little bit, and you saw him going in the top 50 to 100 picks last year, and this year you got a stiff discount, which is awesome. And I think this is still a guy you can kind of buy in on, because I think people are going to remember how he disappointed last year, and you won't have to pay necessarily full freight, and I would go out and do that. Let's move on and talk about someone who is disappointed this year that a lot of people, including myself, paid some full freight on, and that's Edwin Diaz, who has been removed as the closer of the Mariners by their manager, and now it looks like we've got some sort of committee. Chuck, you've been very critical of Edwin Diaz all season long. What have you seen on him, and are you concerned that he's not going to get his job back at any point?
Well, they're claiming that it's a mechanical thing that he's trying to work on. He walked four straight guys the other night. Then the next save opportunity went to Cishek. They sort of announced that he was out of the closer's role for now. I guess I look at it more as a comment in general that I'm never really big on guys that haven't held a job for very long. As far as moving into that, you know, elite closer thing, I draft closers for safety, which is a very ironic statement since all of my closers have gone down in a combination of dumpster fires and toxic blazes all year long. But the point being is that this electric stuff is great, but he's 23 years old. We're talking about a guy who, you know, didn't even have 50 games in the bigs going into the season. And people taking him, I saw people reaching as high as like the sixth or seventh closer off the board. And I thought that was a little bit insane. And it's turned out to look pretty insane right now. But, you know, I'm less critical of those kind of picks now because I don't know what a good pick was anymore because most of the top closers, you know, are not doing very well either. But, you know, I still try to micromanage these processes, and I just now all of a sudden you've got, you know, guys like Brad Brock, who everyone said, well, you know, he obviously can be a great closer, and now he looks terrible that he is the closer. And now we have Edwin Diaz, who everyone loved the stuff, and now he goes to a full year in the closer role, and for some reason that seems to be making things different, you know, which it might just be mechanical. So each one needs to be looked at individually, but when you look at the whole scope of what's going on, you know, it's getting more and more difficult to try and put your finger on exactly what to look for in a closer. Hopefully Melanson will come back. It sounds like he's doing pretty well. But there really is, unless you have Jansen, there's really not these elite top-level closers that are providing you much value this year outside of Kimbrel, who was taken after Diaz in some of the drafts that I was in. So I'm just interested in your guys' comments and thoughts on it as well.
Andrea, what are your thoughts on the whole Edwin Diaz and Mariners closer situation?
So I'm kind of glad that you put him in this rundown today because we have a friend that was at a spring training game sitting near the dugout, right behind the players. He's in the industry, but I'm not supposed to say his name. Either way, he overheard the players talking about Edwin Diaz. They were basically saying that when they go up to bat against him, that they're going to just crush the ball because he doesn't know where he's throwing most of the time. Like, he has absolutely no command over his pitches. So it's like, you know, they were making jokes. They were saying it's kind of scary. And I kind of brushed it off. Like, I don't know, but this guy's been really good about telling us. He told us about Melvin Upton last year, and we were like, right, Melvin Upton. But he had a decent year, so that paid off. But we were really questioning the whole Edwin Diaz thing because he did so good in his first, you know, 50, 49 games at the major league level, and people were drafting him like crazy. I don't own him on any leagues, but I mean, you can just take a look at his numbers. He's giving up way more home runs than he has ever given up, even in the minor leagues. He's walking way more batters than he ever should be walking, and that just goes, I mean, it's kind of like just more proof that his command is crappy. The fact that they took his job away, you know, it kind of was surprising. It's not that he's had a ton of blow-ups, you know. Just this recent one was the worst one, but they took his job away. He's going to get it back, though, I think. I mean, if they don't know what's wrong, they can't really say it's mechanical. That's really where I question the whole thing, is like, you say it's mechanical, but do you know what's wrong? I don't think they do.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Edwin Diaz and the closing situation in Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, I echo the issues with the mechanics and not knowing where he's throwing the ball. It just seems like they really need to sit him down and work through those issues. I read some interesting comments from the Mariners pitching coach, Mel Stottlemyre, and it was sort of in a positive vein. This is from back in spring training, talking about how funky his delivery is, but it isn't a smooth delivery. And from what Andrea is saying, it sounds like, you know, nobody on the team really thinks that he truly knows where the ball is going. And that's kind of come to a head with that four walk appearance that got him taken out of the role. So I think they obviously think he just needs to be taken out of the high pressure situations altogether. And I certainly think he's the most talented guy in that bullpen. So if they can iron out the mechanics and get him back to what we saw in the second half of last year, then I think he'll probably take back the role pretty quickly. But it's anybody's guess how soon that will be. So, yeah, I think that the talent for him to be a top-tier closer is still there, because that fastball is good enough to strike anybody out. But until he knows where it's going, I think it might be a little while until we see him back in the role.
Yeah, I think the main issue is with his slider. He's having a whole lot of trouble locating it and putting it where it needs to go. He's either leaving it way too far outside of the zone where everybody's just kind of spitting on it, or leaving it up in the zone and people are crushing it. So, and that was a pitch that had positive value last year, and this year has very, very much negative. I think there is a mechanical issue going on. I think the Mariners will work on fixing it. But I think the point that Darius just brought up is kind of the most important, is there's no one really else in that bullpen that I would necessarily trust to hold down the role the whole year or the rest of the season. I mean, right now you've got Tony Zick, you have Scrabble, who I'm not even going to try to pronounce his actual name, Nick Vincent, Steve Cisak, who's already blown a save, and they said it's going to be some sort of committee, so... I would guess that Zick and Cishek kind of lead that committee, because Vincent hasn't in the past been able to really to do much in a closing role or even pitch on back-to-back days. So I would kind of put my money on Zick, but I'm not really trying to invest in this bullpen unless I'm really, really in some dire straits in an American League only. I just think there's more risk than there is reward. And I think you could it could easily blow up your face, and we could be talking about a different guy each week. And so I like Zick personally from a skill standpoint, but so far this season he has not been very good.
I just want to add that by the end of last year, adding to this whole blurriness, by the end of last year, people were talking about when Edwin Diaz was going to be put back into the rotation, as if they were slotting him as a closer that was eventually going to be a starter. And now he's walking four guys in a row during relief appearances and has mechanical issues. So I guess it makes me wonder sometimes, like, go back and try and micromanage these processes and say, well, how can we get a little bit better control of these situations? Because people were acting like he was the next Johan Santana, who was a reliever that turned into a great starter, or Adam Wainwright, or, you know, these other, you know, people that have switched roles. And now he doesn't seem to be able to find his ass with his hands. So to me, these, you know, this sort of adds to the cloudiness of what's going on with pitching right now. And if you have, you know, not a lot of guys on the DL, and you have most of your guys maintaining an ERA that's under 4 or 4.5, you should sort of be jumping for joy.
All right. Let's move on and talk about another guy who has been struggling since returning from injury, and that's Jorge Soler of the Kansas City Royals. You know, he was a big part of their offseason move. Has started the year off on the DL, and now that he's back, is struggling. Only has one home run, .167 average. Andrea, are you willing to kind of wait and see if Jorge Soler will turn it around?
No, I'm not. And I'll tell you why. He's never done anything, ever. Not even in the minor leagues has he ever done anything. He's not done anything in the major leagues. He's had more power in the majors than he's ever had in the minors. He's only had, I mean, and the most he's ever had is 12 home runs. That was last season. He had 12 home runs. So, I mean, granted, it was only over like a half season of at-bats. I just don't know what the big hype is about this guy, because he's never really done anything that great. And he's batting .167. It's just, it's horrible. I would not hold him. I wouldn't have drafted him in the first place, but he's definitely not worth a spot on my bench at all.
Darius, are you as negative on Jorge Soler?
Sorry.
It's okay. I just hope he's not listening right now.
Sorry, Jorge. I like you. I just don't like you on my team.
Jorge, yeah. I'm willing to be a little bit more patient with him. It's only been 37 plate appearances this year. I think he got messed around with the Cubs and didn't really get a lot of playing time there and never got a consistent run in the team. And whether the Royals will keep giving him a run in the team if he keeps hitting like this is another matter, I suppose. But I do worry that this is going to be a power-only profile. If he keeps hitting as many fly balls as he is, I don't think the average is going to be very good, and we're not going to get any speed out of him. And then the other issue is that the Royals haven't been very good. Guys like Hosmer and Moustakas are picking it up now. But certainly if he's going to be batting sort of fifth, sixth in that lineup, there is absolutely nothing really exciting behind him. Alex Gordon looks terrible. And they've got Alcides Escobar still leading off. And he's got about a 200 OBP. So I still don't think it's going to be a great run scoring lineup. So I'm willing to be a bit patient, especially if you've got him in a bit of a deeper league and you don't want to give up on him too early, because I think there's still some power production there. But I don't know whether it's going to be coming anytime soon. And certainly in a shallow league, I think go ahead and drop him for a guy who's on a hotter run.
Yeah, I want to preach patience, because I usually tend to preach patience, especially early on in the season. But even if he does kind of, show some better form, I think his profile is so common nowadays within fantasy baseball that it's not even worth waiting around for. I mean, even if he does turn it around, we're talking about a power-only guy who's not going to have a huge average, is batting in one of the worst ballparks in the major leagues in a really bad lineup that's only going to get worse as they sell pieces. So, I mean, if he's a guy who can hit you 15-plus home runs the rest of the way, there's 40 other guys out there, at least that could probably do that in fantasy baseball. And I just don't see what the benefit is in terms of holding on to him the rest of the way. So I did invest a share, or maybe even two, for very, very cheaply coming into the season. But I've dropped all of mine, and I'm moving on to greener pastures. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jorge Soler?
Well, I don't know if I should celebrate the fact that suddenly I get to be positive about someone, or I should lament the fact that I just sound very reactionary when I say this, but I actually could not disagree more with any of the three outlooks that I've heard about Jorge Soler. I think he was grossly underutilized and not really given a chance to grow as a Cubs player, which is an ongoing theme that we see right now as the Cubs logjam their entire lineup with players who should be playing every day that play four times a week if they're lucky. I also see a guy in Jorge Soler who has walked in four of his last five games, including two multi-walk tilts, which is usually a great sign as far as I'm concerned. He had a very stinted spring training because of him being hurt, so he didn't get much chance to get ready for the season. I think he could hit 30 home runs the next to the rest of the way, and I'm delighted that I have three shares of him, and I think it's going to pay off greatly the rest of the season. I do realize that what is being said about him is technically correct, that he hasn't done anything, but he also has never had a regular job without a guy breathing down his neck because of how Joe Maddon chooses to use his lineup, which is really good for a lot of players, but not always good for every player. And I think Jorge Soler has gotten overblown a little bit because, the whole Cuban thing happened around the same time as the Yasiel Puig thing. So, I just think that with the amount of investment that Kansas City has in Soler, they're going to see if they have a building block for the future. And if he manages to hit even 20-plus home runs the rest of the way, I'll be pretty excited about his growth in general. I love to see guys starting to walk a lot, because that means that they're laying off pitches and they're going to start getting better ones to hit.
Who are you, and what have you done with Chuck Anderson?
Like I said, I'm usually reactionary, which this is, but I really expected people to have a little bit more faith in the process here of what's going on with Soler, because I just feel like he never got a fair shake in Chicago.
And I agree they never got a fair shake, but everything that we've always talked about with him is projection. And I'm at this point in the season, I need actual statistics.
Well, like,
I need him to show me something. Don't get me wrong, the walk rate is great, and I love it, but it doesn't, the huge bump in OBP isn't that amazing when it's still only 324 because his average is so low.
I don't understand what the difference is between him and Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber's hitting .179.
One, he's on a better team. Two, he's leading off. Three's actually shown the power at the major league level and is showing it this year. Even if he does struggle with the average, Schwarber, because he's leading off for such a good team, the OBP will help him in the other counting categories.
Well, it's just a month and a half for I'm not a Royals guy by any means, but they're going to carve out some kind of a triage plan here with the rest of the season, and I think you're going to see Soler wind up towards the middle of the lineup as the season goes on, and I think we're giving up too soon on him within this little meeting that we're having now, and I see signs of growth and. And I guess I'm alone. But when I see a guy who's got a 167 batting average and he's got a 324 OBP, I believe in Schwarber as a hitter. I have a tendency to believe in Soler as a hitter, too. So,
yeah, I mean, it's amazing because you have an uncanny ability to force me into talking up guys that I hate, i.e. Brandon Belt and Kyle Schwarber. So I'm going to move on, though. We're going to talk about a guy that... Darius was really interested in talking about, and that's Zach Godley. Darius, what have you seen so far from Mr. Godley?
Yeah, I mean, it's only been three starts this year, so obviously the sample is incredibly small, but he's going to his curveball way up more often, which looks like a really good pitch to me. He was already kind of a ground ball guy, but he's up over 70% this year, and he's also getting more than 15% swinging strikes, which is really good. So obviously there's regression to come over what he's done so far, but I think he could be a pretty sort of... solid mid-rotation guy for the Diamondbacks, and I'm also kind of interested in this humidor that they're apparently installing in Chase Field, which Alan Nathan, the kind of physics of baseball expert, reckons will reduce home runs by 25 to 50%, which sounds pretty exciting to me. So I think the situation could get a lot better for him. And the one thing that I will note, just on a short-term basis, is that he should get the Padres on Sunday. So even if you just pick him up for one start, that's a pretty good one to pick him up for.
Andrew, what are your thoughts on Mr. Godley?
So I really like him. There's a couple red flags that I see about him. One of them is the fact that the batting average on balls in play for hitters is 192, which is probably going to come up. And I don't like the fact that he walks a ton of batters. Like, he just walks way too many batters. And I definitely agree that he's got a great matchup this weekend. Going to San Diego is great, although him and pretty much every other Arizona Diamondback is horrible away from home. I don't think that's going to be the case in San Diego, but his ERA is 4.05 on the road, which is not good at all. But, you know, the two things I don't like is his walks and his and the batting average on balls in play. But other than that, I love it. I think it's great.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Zach Godley?
I think he's the kind of guy that a lot of people are going to have to turn to. You know, even his FIP 3.14 is definitely serviceable. I just feel like a lot of times when these guys have to stretch out in the middle of a season like this, I feel like there's some pitfalls as far as trying to figure out, you know, how often they're going to get used and what they're going to do when it comes to trying to hold back on the innings. So I think he's worth a lot more in wins leagues than he is in sort of quality starts leagues, because that's where the difference between five and six innings can come in. And I also just want to mention that the last report I read on the humidor is that suddenly Arizona has grown eerily silent about what date it's actually going to be implemented, or if it's going to actually be implemented at all. So maybe it doesn't really suit their team as well as they forecasted that it might to use the humidor this year. But we don't have a firm date anymore as to when it's going to be used, was the last report that I read. You know, certainly we all have our ears to the ground, so maybe somebody else has heard something different now. But, you know, a lot of these statistics that I see for Godley, you know, you have to wonder exactly how sustainable they are. You know, he cut his home run rate by 67% from last year. The walk rate is definitely concerning, because that's significantly up from last year, but, you know, the strikeout rate is way up. And in an 18 and two-thirds of an innings pitched sample, it's hard to get overly excited. Like, I wouldn't drop anyone major for him, and I don't think anyone's suggesting that they would, but I'm still in a wait and see mode as far as Godley is concerned, because it's still a pretty bad park to pitch in.
Can I just say one thing real quick?
Go right ahead.
we talk about the humidor in Arizona. That's so interesting. I had not heard about it, but as you've been talking, I was looking it up to see what's up with that. But, you know, they have a roof on their – I just don't get what – they have a roof. So every day it's like 70 degrees in there, especially in the middle of the summertime. It's going to be 70 degrees, perfect weather for – no need for a humidor. I just – I found that pretty interesting considering the fact that they have a roof.
I think it's less about the actual temperature and more about the air pressure and kind of in the moisture.
I think
in the air.
Humidity, so low there that that's why it's going to affect the balls so much. It's so dry in the desert that if you were to put them in the humidor and increase that humidity, they take on so much more moisture that it's going to drastically decrease the home run rate. But I would definitely recommend Alan Nathan wrote the article on the Hardball Times. And he knows a lot more about physics than I do. So he explains everything in there and why it will have such a big effect on it. So I definitely recommend going to read that.
Though, I do remember them doing this in Colorado and it not having the effect a lot of people projected it to. It definitely had an effect, but it didn't have the massive effect that you know, it's not like home runs have decreased a ton necessarily in Colorado either. I just think it's all projection in terms of how much is going to help, how much is not going to help. And I think you kind of just got to take a wait-and-see approach and see what happens when they actually put it in. I do think it does give a little bit of hope for guys like Zach Greinke, who seemingly is starting to turn things around on his own. But if you could add maybe, any sort of help to him and other guys like Taiwan Walker within Arizona, I think that's nice. In terms of Zach Godley, he just walks too many guys for me. And that home run rate is coming up in spite of the fact that they will be putting in that humidor. I mean, he's given up less than half a home run per nine right now, which is way below where he should be. He's stranding a ton of guys right now. That's going to come down. I do like the fact that he's getting more ground balls. I think that's nice. But I think there's obvious regression coming. I've never really believed in him, though the numbers in the minor leagues are good enough where I think you probably could. I just don't see the huge upside coming from a guy like Godley. I think you ride the hot streak while you can and then jump off before it gets too disastrous, because I do think there are some blow up outings coming. But this week in San Diego, that is a nice matchup against a Padres team who struggled tremendously offensively. All right, let's go ahead and move on and let's talk about Anthony Rizzo, who has started off the year being un-Anthony Rizzo like. So, Andrea, are you concerned at all about Anthony Rizzo?
I don't think so. I mean, not so much. His batting average on balls in play is .219. I think that's going to come up. I think his contact rate is still positive at 83%. That's even better than it was last year. So his numbers, like he is striking out a little bit. Well, he's striking out 13% of the time, which is hella low for what we're dealing with nowadays in baseball. It's actually gone down from last year. So. And his walk rate is up from last year. So, yeah, he's not having a great season, and he's actually sitting out today. But all in all, I think this is all going to turn around for him. And when his batting average on balls in play comes together a little bit, and the Chicago Cubs are not hitting as a team right now. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with Anthony Rizzo. And even if I did, I would still hold on to him, because what are you going to do? You can't not play him, and you definitely can't throw him away.
Yeah, I know the average is .221, but like you mentioned, the walk rate's up. Strikeout rate is down. The BABIP is awful. Will definitely come up and help normalize the average. The thing I actually like is he's running again. He only stole 3 bases in total last year. He's already stolen 4 this year. There's just something going on in Chicago where guys are struggling right now, and as things heat up in Wrigley, things will get right for them. And I think Rizzo's just one of those guys that is just getting a tad bit unlucky. I wonder if the defense, which last year was historically great, and this year has been mediocre to bad, is having a little bit of effect on the pitching staff. In terms of their pitchers struggling. So I'd be interested to see if they get a little bit more lucky in terms of their defense, if their pitching goes up, and I think their offense will rebound as well. So I'm not worried about Chicago, the Cubs in general, and I'm especially not worried about Anthony Rizzo. Darius, what are your thoughts on Anthony Rizzo so far?
Yeah, I'm not concerned. I think he's had stretches like this before, and it's more obvious now because it's the start of the season. But I think that BABIP is so low, and I think he's been hitting the ball fine and just been getting unlucky. And as mentioned by Andrew, that strikeout to walk rate is outstanding. I mean, you rarely see guys strike out as little as that these days, especially guys with this much power. So I think there's definitely a hot streak coming, and he's going to be just fine.
Chuck, any worry about Anthony Rizzo for you?
I wouldn't say worry. I would just say, from an overview point of view, that that the Cubs had an awful lot of very young players participate in, you know, what was a wonderful season for them last year. And I was concerned going in that younger players especially seem to have a hard time handling that amount of success. And we see, you know, guys like Addison Russell, guys like Kyle Schwarber, suddenly not looking exactly like themselves. But we have so many statistics now that we can see that in the long term, they're going to become themselves again. And I think Anthony Rizzo is one of those guys. Now, regionally, for me, being mixed in with so many Cubs fans and me being a Brewers fan, it's awfully enjoyable right now to see that, you know, that Fangraphs and other places have the Brewers as 12% more likely to make the playoffs than the Cubs, which, of course, we all know is kind of just a farce and a statistical anomaly because the Cubs could turn it around so much faster because they have pitching upside, and my Brewers do not. But at the same time, the question will become now, how long does this hangover last for this team in general? And I think that's a curious question. It's one of the things that makes baseball fun to watch right now, because obviously Rizzo is still a very good hitter. Obviously Schwarber has huge upside. Addison Russell didn't go from top flight, top five kind of prospect to a guy that we expected to be struggling like this. And in the meantime, we have this battery of Ian Happ and, you know, Eloy Jimenez off in the distance and you know, Ben Zobrist back, and you can watch Briz Zobrist commercials, and all this is, it's kind of like circus-like to me from being in the Midwest. So it's going to be very fun to watch the fallout. It's one of the things I'm most looking forward to. But at some point, it's just a matter when, these guys are going to be back to very, very good players.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about the Cubs. They're only two games behind St. Louis in the division, and a game and a half behind your Brewers, and they've been playing just god-awful. So, I mean, they're playing 500 ball, and they've looked absolutely atrocious. They're going to – they'll catch fire at some point and run away with this division like I think we all thought they would. Let's move on and talk about Addison Reed, who has kind of assumed the closing job, at least for now, in New York, because Juris Familia has got an arterial problem within his shoulder that may make him miss the entire season, and at best – he will miss the next couple months as they try to rehab him back and potentially have to get him surgery on that shoulder. Reed, who started off the year kind of closing with Familia on suspension, was actually pretty good, but blew his first opportunity out against your Brewers, Chuck. So, Andrea, what are your thoughts on Addison Reed?
So when I look at Addison Reed, I think, you know, I wonder if he's just not good in high-pressure situations. I mean, he's really good at getting holds. Last season, he got 40 holds. I think it was the most in baseball. But he doesn't walk anybody, but he's giving up a ton of home runs, which is too many. And he's never really done anything. If you look at his statistics over the past five seasons, you can see that anytime that he was put into the closer role, which was the last time in 2014, his ERA was still up high, still in like the fours or the high threes, and you just don't want that from your closer. I don't think that he's ever going to be a great closer. He might be a good setup guy, but I just don't see, like, I don't see a ton changing with him. He strikes out a good number of batters. He doesn't walk, but if you're giving up home runs, it's just as bad. And when you have, you know, an ERA north of 3.5 as a closer, it's no good. I don't think he's going to lose his job, though, because nobody's there to take it.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Addison Reed?
Well, you know, I think Andrea nailed it. You're looking at a guy who has been consistently good enough to get thrown in a situation to be the closer and not consistently good enough to be relied on for long-term stretches as the closer. At the same time, the Mets are going to get to the point where they almost have to start cutting bait on the season. And if they're going to cut bait on the season, it's interesting to me that Addison Reed's on a one-year deal. So they may be keeping him in the role not only because they want not only because they don't have a replacement, but they also may very well want him to catch fire long enough for them to be able to flip him for something at the deadline. Because we've seen these relievers now that can go to setup roles in other situations suddenly become a high market priority with what Terry Francona pulled off in the playoffs last year. So I do find it very interesting that he hadn't walked a guy, etc. All these other, you know, these great statistics that they threw around. And the first day he was in my lineup, he gave up a three-run bomb to none other than Manny Pena. So, you know, Manny Pena, somebody's probably going to get him out long-term, I imagine. But I guess it wasn't Addison Reed in a key situation when he finally found out that the role was going to be his long-term. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But he's going to get a lot of saves, but it's probably not going to be very pretty.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Addison Reed? Does this guy not have a closer mentality, or is he going to turn things around?
Yeah, I actually think he'll be fine. I'm really impressed. He still hasn't walked anybody in 18 and two-thirds innings, which is kind of incredible. And he's striking out more than 11 per nine. He's just been really good since he got to the Mets. He sort of had that disaster when he was the Diamondbacks closer and everything went a bit wrong. And I think he spent a bit of time in the minors then as well. And sort of since then, since he got to New York, he's been one of the best relievers in baseball, really. He's had a couple of issues with home runs at various points in his career, and certainly that's why his ERA doesn't look great so far this year. He's already given up 5 home runs, which I think is more than he gave up all of last season. But I also wonder if this is just the kind of thing we're going to have to get used to these days, with hitters taking the approach they are and maybe trading a few more strikeouts for the extra power, whether we're just going to have to get used to some guys giving up a few more home runs, because that's what we should expect with the home run rate just climbing and climbing all the time. So I actually think he can hold this job, and I think he's going to give you a lot of strikeouts as well. And whether the closer mentality is really the kind of thing that affects him or not, I don't know. I'm not going to speculate on that, but I think he's going to be able to hold the job, and I think he'll give you some pretty good numbers while he does it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, I don't know if the closer mentality is even necessarily a real thing. I think there is something to being able to work under pressure and some guys potentially doing it better than others. But I mean, this is a guy who had 25 plus saves in 3 straight seasons from 2011 to 2013, came up as a closing prospect, and I think he'll be fine, because to Andrea's point, the Mets have nobody else in that bullpen I think that they would feel that comfortable with holding down the role now that Familia is on the DL. I mean, they just signed Neil Ramirez, who's now on his third team in less than a month. So to man a position in that bullpen. So I'm not worried about kind of his safety in terms of keeping the role, because I just think unless he is truly atrocious, they're just going to keep running him out there. The home run rate should normalize. I mean, it's over twice his career rate right now. I think it will come down. He's getting plenty of strikeouts and swings and misses. I don't think there's any reason to be worried about him. And if you can go out and get him for a reduced rate, I actually might try to do that, because I think the job is his rest of the way, unless they trade him like Chuck mentioned. And I think he's going to give some pretty decent return. Let's talk about Keon Broxton, who's Chuck's favorite boy right now, just absolutely crushing it for Milwaukee right now after starting off the season extremely slow. So, Chuck, what have you seen out of Keon Broxton?
Well, I think it's wonderful to own a piece of that offense right now, because mm-hmm. they're basically scoring, you know, 6-7-plus runs every single game. And he's always been an incredibly streaky player. He's on a good streak. He's got the carrying tool of massive amounts of speed. So even when he's on his downswing, you can feel like you're looking to get something out of him on a regular basis, kind of like a pitcher who strikes a lot of guys out. Even when they're not pitching at their best, at least you know you're going to get something out of the stat line on a pretty regular basis. He is attacking. I think the thing that is most odd about what's going on with him is in recent days, I've seen him bat behind Jett Bandy. And watch Jett Bandy hit into double plays in the middle of rallies, which is somewhat confuzzling as Keon Broxton is scorching. And so they haven't really moved him up in the lineup as consistently as I thought they would. Now, yesterday I saw he was batting in a different spot. So the Brewers are noticeably fidgety with their lineup. They don't have a lot of constants in their lineup except for Braun batting third, basically. So what I would like to see, or fourth I should say, maybe, but anyway, I would love to see his value go skyrocketing, because I think it's going to, and then next year he'll disappoint. I'm going to remind people of Carlos Gomez when
Gomez was a first round pick.
Yeah, that's not working out too good, is it? But the point being is that when you move a guy like this up to a first round pick and he's a very streaky player, there's a chance for a huge regression. And I think he could be good for most of this year. And next year he's probably on my do not draft list.
Well, in Carlos Gomez's defense, he did pretty much go 20-30 and have one 20-40 season 3 years in a row. So, I mean, like, there was a reason why Gomez was a first-round pick. And he paid off one of the years he was.
Well, in one of our local auctions, Keon Broxton this year went for $27. So I think this is the kind of...
I think that's some homerism in that. There's some home field inflation there.
I agree, but I think there is home field inflation, but I also think that this is the kind of skill set that mesmerizes people. This Trey Turner possibility of a guy stealing 35 to 45 bases and hitting 20 plus home runs is mesmerizing for fantasy owners.
Hence, I said all off season long that Keon Broxton could easily go 20-30-40 with home runs, stolen bases, and strikeout rate. I mean, I said it all offseason, and I'm glad to see he's turning it around. Andrew, what are your thoughts so far on Keon Broxton?
So I wish they would move him up in the lineup too to second. He batted second yesterday, but the fact that they're moving him all over the place, he's batting seventh, he is batting behind people that just, you know, it's just, I wish that they would figure out a lineup and stay with it. The Brewers are doing well right now. I worry about Keon Broxton. I mean, I think that if I owned him flat out, I would sell the crap out of him, because his strikeout rate is unbelievable. It's like 38%. That's like Joey Gallo strikeout rate. I mean, it's really bad. His contact rate has never been good. It's 58%. And so I'm going to sound like a broken record and bring up the batting average on balls in play again, but it's 409 and it's unsustainable. So, I mean, I do know, while I know that his batting average on balls in play is typically a little bit high, 409 is not sustainable. His walk rate is horrible. It's 6%. Last year, at least, it was 14%. So with these underlying numbers, that his strikeout rate, his contact rate, and his walk rate, I don't think that he's going to sustain it, and I would sell him really quickly.
Darius, are you selling or buying on Keon Broxton?
Yeah, it's such a tantalizing profile for fantasy with the power and the speed. But to those numbers that Andrea mentioned, I kind of went back to see if anybody had ever done this over a full season and actually got to play. And I could only find two players who struck out over 35% of the time and walked than less 8% of the time. That was Tyler Flowers in 2014 and Chris Davis in 2009. This is when Chris Davis was not good. And, Tyler Flowers, I don't think I need to say too much about Tyler Flowers a couple of years ago. This doesn't happen. Players don't get to play for full season with numbers like this. I know we're in a new era and strikeouts are more acceptable than ever, but I've got to think that if Broxton keeps up these kind of plate discipline stats, at the very worst, he's going to be the streakiest player in the majors, because there's going to be so many plate appearances in which he's not giving you anything. And, you know, there's a very definite possibility that he plays less if he keeps striking out this much. So I love the upside, and I certainly think he could go 20-30 if he played all season, but I just question whether any major league team is going to let a guy play every day for the whole season with strikeout numbers like that.
You know what team is going to let him play? It's the Brewers. Because, one, they've got no reason to believe that they're actually going to continue to compete all season long. As Chuck has mentioned on numerous occasions, including this podcast, that pitching staff is absolutely just a dumpster fire, and will not be able to sustain any sort of success. They knew what they had in Broxton coming into the season, and started with him batting like second and leadoff this year. So, I mean, like, they were totally fine with it. They are totally fine with it, because his walk percentage helps offset a lot of the contact issues, and he's just so dynamic when he does make contact.
Year I would have agreed with you, but he isn't walking.
Well, give him time. I mean, you know, it's, you know... He started off the year really, really struggling, you know, but he's hitting 346, 382, 635 in the month of May. I mean, things are turning around. Yes, he's not walking like he usually does, but I think that will come back to earth, as well as some of the other numbers that you guys are mentioning. I think he is who he is, and I think the Brewers are okay with that. He plays good enough defense out there. I mean, this is also a guy who got creamed in the face earlier this year. So, I mean, I think he's still kind of settling back in after getting pummeled in the face by a ball that got away from, I'm trying to remember who it was who threw it. But, you know, that can always shake a lot of guys' confidence. He seems to be getting it back. I'm not worried about Keon Broxton. You knew what you were getting into when you purchased him, and this is exactly what you purchased. You purchased a guy who was going to be extremely streaky, who was going to strike out way too much, but the other tools to his game were going to keep him on the field and in the lineup, and I think you're getting what you paid for. So if you want to sell, go ahead, because now, like Andrew said, now's the time to do it, because everybody is raving about Keon Broxton and him delivering on the promise that I think some of us bought in. But for me, I'm just gonna keep riding it, and you know, I baked in the average woes into the teams that I have him on, and I'm gonna be fine with the production I get from him. Let's talk about Tanaka, who is not delivering on the promise that you drafted him. He's got the lowest strikeout rate of his career, highest ERA so far. Darius, what are your thoughts on Tanaka?
Yeah, this is a weird one to me, because kind of a lot of the things that we normally look at look fine. He's still getting hits to swing and miss, and the strikeouts are a bit down, but they're fairly similar to last year when he was pretty successful. And the walks have come up a bit, but there's not so many that you would consider it to be horrendous. But the results have just been awful, and it seems like he's giving up hard contact every time players make contact with the ball. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that. He doesn't throw that hard, obviously, and for some reason hitters seem to be finding it very easy to square him up. So maybe that's something that will correct itself over time, and I don't think he's going to run a 5.80 ERA the rest of the season. But I also think that the upside is getting ever more limited with the strikeouts coming down yet again from last year. It was kind of worth it with the low 3 ERA and the low walks. You know, you could kind of get away with that, but I think he's kind of becoming a less and less appealing option, because even if he does rebound, if he's only going to strike out 7 per 9 and he's kind of putting this many balls in play, then I'm not sure how much better it's going to get.
I need to stop the podcast real quick just to announce the fact that Bradley Zimmer has hit his first major league home run, and everybody should bow down to my knowledge about fantasy baseball.
You mean the AL Rookie of the Year?
Yes, the AL Rookie of the Year. Mark my words. He's up early enough where he could do this. Andrea, though, what are your thoughts on Masahiro Tanaka?
So, I mean, I have been kind of wondering about this guy for several years now. I mean, he's one pitch away from Tommy John surgery since 2014, when he decided not to go through with it. I mean, he had a partially torn UCL back then. And so he's just a special case because of the fact that he's been able to pitch full seasons ever since then. I mean, last year he pitched another 200 innings, probably had the best season of his life. So I kind of quit, you know, on my rant about the fact that he's this close to Tommy John. But his, like, one of you guys just mentioned just a few seconds ago that all of his numbers are pretty much the same. He's not striking out as many batters, but he's also, you know, I just don't see any major difference except for the fact that we all know that he's been nursing this injury. Who knows if it's back or what, but if I owned him, I would brace myself for the fact that he's could be gone for the rest of the season in the near future. I mean, the other day when he had that horrible, you know, one inning pitched, almost two innings pitched, it was just, I've never seen anything like that from Tanaka, and it was just all kinds of home runs given up. I mean, I just don't think he's going to last the full season. I think he's hurt. He also, one more thing, he missed the final week of the season last year because he had a forearm strain. They said it was a slight forearm strain, and I'm not sure if that has anything to do with what's going on now because he's come in, he's pitched several starts, he's been fine. But these underlying injuries that are lingering around, they could pop out at any moment's notice, and I just don't think that he's going to be healthy.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Tanaka?
Well, while listening to the Yankees broadcasts, I've heard their broadcasters hint that he's had trouble locating a split finger pitch, which is the pitch that has been his out, especially his out since since he had the partial tear of his UCL. You know, I was the guy who had a couple different things going on with Tanaka over the last couple years. The first thing is that I always have some doubt in the back of my mind about the duration of Asian pitchers' careers because they use their pitchers extensively when they're younger at far higher rates. They don't have the caution with pitch counts, using them in back-to-back games in the playoffs, et cetera, and so forth when they're younger. So I had that concern. Then I'm also reactionary to the fact that partially torn UCL is something that Irvin Santana, currently the second best pitcher in the bigs statistically, has had for like 5 years. So, I think it was natural in the age of Tommy John to have the reaction that, well, you know, this isn't going to happen. But every injury is different, you know, and the fact that he was able to pitch for a couple years, I don't think the UCL is what's at play here. I think it could be just a history of excessive usage before we even saw him as a player. And he still pitches in a really tough division in a really bad ballpark. And seeing, you know, his home run rate where it is, I mean, even his FIP is 5.36. He's one of those guys that people drafted and leaned on as their number two, or in some best case scenarios, their number three starters. And he's actually the only one that's pitching so poorly that I think you have to wait for some signs of life before you actually use him.
Yeah, I'm getting really worried. I don't know if anybody mentioned the dip in the velocity, but that is concerning to me. He just doesn't seem to be commanding the pitches in his arsenal, especially well. And to your credit, what you mentioned, Chuck, in terms of his splitter, it doesn't seem like he's got a good feel of it. He's got negative pitch values on pretty much every single one of his pitches so far this year. I am worried. I'm worried that this is the injury finally catching up with him, and it would serve me right because I was one of the biggest critics when he first got injured, and I stayed neutral the year after. And this is the year I was finally like, all right, screw it. He's a second tier ace, and he's screwing me left and right here. So I'm extremely worried. I think he is hurt, and I don't know if it's the UCL or maybe something else that's going on, but I think there's something actually wrong with him. Lowest strikeout rate of his career, highest walk rate of his career. The BABIP is a little bit high, but nothing awful. His strand rate is a little bit low, but nothing like that would make me think that, you know, he's getting extremely unlucky. I think he's just getting beat because he's leaving things in the zone. And I'm worried that there is something wrong with that elbow. And so, You know, sometimes we try to, in fantasy, we try to buy high, sell high and buy low. And I don't know how easy it is to do that. But if someone is trying to buy to knock on off of you at a reduced rate, I'm willing to give it right now. I'm that concerned. Let's finish up and talk about Kyle Schwarber. We're in a little bit long, so we're not going to get to every guy on the list. But I definitely want to talk about Schwarber because Chuck mentioned him earlier in the episode, and it made me defend him, unfortunately. So Andrea, what are your thoughts so far on Schwarber's season?
Well, I could be pretty quick. He's the worst leadoff batter in baseball, and he shouldn't be a leadoff batter. I don't know what they're thinking putting him in the leadoff spot, but he's not a leadoff batter. And I do know, in his defense, I do know that Theo was trying to put him back behind the plate. So the chances are good that you're going to see him getting some time as catcher, which is good for fantasy. But other than that, he's just not even ownable. He's just horrible leadoff batter, and I think it's wrecking the Cubs.
Oh, wow. Darius, what are your thoughts on Schwarber?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of sort of he's kind of symbolizing the issues that the Cubs are having at the moment. They're struggling, and he was supposed to be this great young hitter, and he's really scuffling as well, and sort of everything that they've done poorly seems to have gone along with him. So I think he kind of embodies the struggles the Cubs are going through for a lot of people. I do think he's been getting a bit unlucky. I think he's still hitting the ball hard. I think he needs to hit it in the air a bit more often. And I think sometimes I've seen him a few times and he's got pitches to hit and he's just not quite hit them. And I think these things are going to come around. He's taken a lot of walks still, so that's great, especially if you're in an OBP league. You've kind of had that floor. Still got a 315 OBP, even though he's batting 187. So once again, this is a guy who kind of gives you that floor even when he's not hitting for average. I do think that you can't expect him to have a huge average either. I think you want the power out of him. And you've got six home runs, so it's not been nothing. But I think this will turn around and he'll start getting a few more home runs and the Cubs will start hitting again and he'll score a lot of runs as well. So I'm not too worried about him myself.
Chuck, are you worried about Kyle Schwarber?
I wouldn't say that I'm worried about him. I think 44 strikeouts in 36 games is not really all that good. I do believe in a World Series hangover here, and I know I mentioned it earlier. I believe in that, especially for the younger players that maybe haven't dealt with this kind of nationally noticed and recognized success. He is coming off a really good game. I think he's got the kind of game and the kind of swing that's going to be streaky in general. So I think you're going to see him hit home runs in bunches. I still think he gets to a minimum of, 27 or 28 home runs yet. And the biggest concern that I had with him is I wondered if Joe Maddon was going to not put him in the lineup all that regularly, just because of defensive factors, because I thought maybe Wilson Contreras was really going to run away with the catcher's gig. And now we sort of have this opposite effect going on where now Ian Happ gets called up and he's hitting really well. And the question of his sustainability and how they're going to generate at-bats for everyone else comes into view. And I think a lot of Ian Happ's at-bats come at the cost of Javi Baez playing some in the outfield. I think he's going to play more in the infield. And I think it's really good for the value and for fantasy baseball next year if we get another year of catcher eligibility out of Schwarber. So as bad as it's looked so far, I think, an out is an out is an out. And I've almost stopped looking at batting average as a statistic and just look at OBP when it comes to players. And, if they've stuck with him this long, he think things are only going to get better from here.
Listen, the only way you're getting catcher eligibility out of Kyle Schwarber is if you play in Yahoo leagues where they gave it to him to start the year. He has one appearance, zero starts so far at catcher this year. I mean, unless he's starting today, and I just haven't realized it. He has one appearance, zero starts. He's on pace to get catcher eligibility in leagues that require at least 10 games played sometime next May. Not this May, next May. I mean, he's not going to happen. He's not a good catcher. Like, and like he's a really crappy outfielder. They want to save his legs because of coming off the injury. He's not going to get 10 games at catcher this year, and if he does, it'll be super late in the year. And if someone it'll be because someone gets hurt. They're carrying two other catchers on the roster. I mean, if you've listened to this podcast all season and through the off season, you heard me and Matt Thompson especially rail against where Kyle Schwarber, and a lot of people actually at Friends Fantasy Benefits, rail against where Kyle Schwarber is being taken in drafts. There was a huge amount of inflation from the World Series. There were a lot of questions about him defensively, about his ability to make contact, about his ability to not just be a platoon bat that gets replaced defensively late in games. And so if you've listened to this podcast all year long and still drafted Kyle Schwarber, I don't feel bad for you one bit. Now, if you're new to us and you drafted Kyle Schwarber, I wish you had tuned in earlier, because we warned you shit like this could happen. At the same time, he's going to turn it around to some extent. But, I mean, I think this is a guy that is a poor defender, and so he's going to be replaced defensively. He's going to lose at bats that way. I think he could run into platoon issues throughout the season, especially when he struggles. You know, he's a guy that wasn't going to give you a strong average to begin with, and I think people were just kind of starry-eyed because he helped the Cubs win their first World Series in over 100 years. You know, OBP formats, he takes a nice bump up. He is a lot more usable, but there's a lot of question marks about Kyle Schwarber. He needs the DH to come to the National League more than anybody. And it's just, that's not happening. And so I'm not trying to buy low on Schwarber. I'm staying away like I have all year long. All right. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Andrea, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Definitely. Let people again know where you can reach on social media and then where people can hear and read your stuff.
You can find me at RotoLady on Twitter and at LennyMelnickFantasySports.com after you're done reading the Roto write-up during the weekdays, because, you know, that's when it's the best. You can come over and read baseball chatter at LennyMelnickFantasySports.com.
Chuck, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
I'm writing the weekly column known as Of Note for the FWFB site, which I am enjoying. And this week I write about the steps that I think fantasy baseball is going to have to take to acknowledge the differences that are going on within the game and within our hobby. So look for that, if you will. And you can blast me on social media if you'd like to about my overly opinionated ways. And that would be at Just Chucking It on Twitter. And I just want to thank all the fans out there because it's been a great run. We've really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Darius, where can people reach you? What are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I had a piece up on the site yesterday, just a few free agents I found interesting for kind of a different reason. So that included someone we talked about today, Zach Godley, and Matt Joyce, who hit a home run last night and made me look smart. So thanks, Matt Joyce, for that. And you can also find me over at Banished to the Pen, where today I had something up in which I attempted to find something interesting about Jason Vargas. And I think I succeeded. So go and check that out.
The fact that he's still pitching well, I think that's pretty interesting.
In fact, the 34-year-old Jason Vargas is leading the majors in ERA, and it's not that close. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't even realize that. But, I mean, I knew he'd been good. I'm still waiting for that train to derail. you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read everything I write on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or over at Fangraphs, where, as Andrew has mentioned throughout the episode, I write the Roto write-up 4 days a week, and then every once in a while, I contribute a fifth article when I'm not too busy with all my responsibilities here at FanGraphs, and then on the Fantasy Sports Network, where I've got a radio show with Laura Michaels that has just started, and we are getting going strong on that. You can hear that live Thursdays at from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, which has a free app where you can download and listen to that. So definitely do that. And yeah, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Chuck, Darius, Andrew, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.